What, Gemara's? Yeah, here. All right, so we're holding on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, about a quarter of the way down the Amud. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're still slightly behind. We'll catch up in the next couple of days, Bez Hashem. Yeah. No, about a quarter of the way down the Amud. The line begins Minuvelas. Sorry, the line begins Loi, rather, one line above that. Yeah, we haven't gotten to that yet. It's about 15 lines above the Mishnah, yeah? Okay. We were discussing yesterday the issue of, our Mishnah, the first Mishnah, the Perek, talks about three different cases involving a neder that the husband makes that binds his wife. And we talked yesterday of Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, how that worked exactly. Is it that he made the neder, and is it that he made the neder? Is it that she made the neder and he was Mekayim it, etc.? One was that she can't have hanah from him, and we talked about that the 30 days to fix up the situation. And again, we had Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, what does that mean, that the deadline for it, the limit of the neder was 30 days, or does it mean that there was no limit, but he has 30 days to fix up the situation? And Rabbi Hodad said it depends whether she's a wife, whether he's a Kohen or Yisrael. If he's a Kohen, you give him more time. Then we had the second case where there was a neder that she won't eat some kind of fruit, where then the Mishnah just said, Yotzi v'yitn k'soba. And then we had the third one, which is the one we're in the middle of discussing over here, where the neder was that she won't beautify herself with some kind of beauty treatment. And we were discussing yesterday the various types of beauty treatments that exist, and which one we're talking about over here, or how was this neder made? We talked about one way of looking at it is she had made the neder that if I use whatever kind of kishrut it is, then. She makes that depend on something else. She says, if I am miskashit, then that will trigger that the hanah of that I will not be allowed to have hanah from tashmish with you, which automatically would make tashmish also to her, because you can't force a person to enjoy something which is also to them. So that was where we left off yesterday, was that therefore, because kishrut itself, we were arguing maybe the husband may or may not have the right to cancel it. It depends whether it's considered a neder of inri nefesh, or whether it's considered devarim shebeinu lebeinu, etc. But if she makes in turn that on that depends tashmish, which is obviously devarim shebeinu lebeinu, then there's no question that he can cancel it. That's where we're up to. The line begins loy, about 20 lines from the top, but a quarter of the way down the arm. The line begins loy. So the Gemara asks, "V'loy teskashet, v'loy te'oser." You're telling me that we're saying that she makes a neder, or he made the neder, she made the neder, and he confirmed whatever the various possibilities, that she's not gonna beautify herself, and if she does, then hanah of tashmish will be oser. So what's the problem? V'loy teskashet, fine, let her not use these cosmetics. V'loy te'oser, and then she won't become oser. Why are we saying that the husband has the right to cancel such a neder, according to that way of looking at it? The answer is imkain karolam nuvelas. Because if she doesn't, then eventually people are gonna call her nuvelas, disgusting, that she hasn't used whatever kind of perfumes or bodily grooming or whatever that we're talking about over here. Meaning, in other words, therefore, eventually she is going to feel the need to do this kishrut, and then tashmish is going to be also to her. Therefore, that does make it considered a davar shebeinu lebeinu, the kind of neder that her husband can cancel. Because it's inevitable that the result is going to be triggered. It's inevitable at some point she's going to feel the need to use a kishur.
Because
she'll feel otherwise minovelis. The people will think of her as a slovenly person.
She wouldn't marry to death.
No, among her friends, whatever. They'll think less of her for it. Okay, then the question becomes, how about the other way?
Are the people stronger than her husband in that decision?
No, well, her friends, whatever, yeah, I mean, yeah. Okay, how about the other way around? Fine, let's take it the other way around. The Mishnah had, we learned yesterday, based on a Mishnah in the previous Perek, that if a neder is made to not have tashmish, we said that b'shamay b'silo machlokas, whether you wait 1 week or 2 weeks before at that point she's entitled to a divorce. Fine, say by the same logic over here, she will use the kishur, she'll be also in tashmish. Again, you have a week or two to fix up the situation. Why is our Mishnah implying that as soon as the neder is made, already at that point she's entitled to be divorced, or he's entitled to divorce her, as the case may be? The answer is hani mili hechad adra ihu. You know what you're talking about when we say you have the 2 weeks or the 1 week or the 1 month that we mentioned in our Mishnah is where he is the one who made the neder. Why? Because she'll figure like this. She'll figure like this. You know why he made the neder? Because he was angry at me. He was upset temporarily. Fine. Eventually he'll calm down. He'll realize it was a mistake. Therefore, fine, I can wait out a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is. Here it's the other way around. She made the neder. We're saying all this discussion is according to Shmuel, that she made the neder and he was quiet. He didn't confirm it, but he didn't deny it either. Therefore, it takes effect at the end of the day. Sabra, therefore, she's likely to think, Mide ishtik, since he was quiet, misnuhu desonili, then it must mean he hates me. Why would he have allowed my neder, which maybe I made in the heat of the moment, to stand? Evidently, because sure, Itaka does want to get out of tashmish with me, and therefore he figures fine, you know, he'll let it go that I made a neder about kishut, which in turn triggers an issue of tashmish. She'll figure the fact that he didn't say anything implies that he has something permanent against me. And therefore, that entitles her.
She made the neder,
but he's
accusing him.
Because he would have had the option to cancel it. He would have had the option to be made for it. That's what we discussed yesterday. Nothing extra. Fine. But the fact of the matter is, there's a difference between when he makes a neder in the heat of the moment versus when she made the neder and he just ignored it. Fine. You want to make such a neder? Go ahead and make such a neder. Basically. One thing is, Maram Schiff points out that part of the logic is like this. When the husband makes a neder, for example, that triggers a lack of tashmish, you know what? The husband doesn't really have to do such a thing in the first place. He has the right to divorce his wife. Minatora, he has the right to divorce his wife unilaterally. It's only Tehillim D'Rabbeinu Gershom that you can't, and that's long after the Gemara. So he doesn't have to do convoluted things like this. I'm going to make a neder to trigger that she won't be able to have tashmish and therefore end up getting divorced. If he really hates her and wants to be rid of her, he can just divorce her outright. Mashenkin, when it comes to her making a neder, Maram Shit points out, she doesn't have the right to, in many cases, to demand a divorce. We'll get to that in various ways. So therefore the point is that she might have to try to trigger the situation by making a neder that's gonna make it that if the neder ends up being in effect, that her husband is gonna end up having to divorce her because they can't have relations. So she might make the neder, and when she sees that indeed her husband isn't made for the neder, that kind of confirms the half. So you know what? You know what? It's true. You know, I see I want out of the marriage, therefore I'm trying to trigger the situation, and he's willing to go along with it.
The great method of attaining a guest.
If all the women do
that,
it's a sort of a passive aggressive type situation. No, but it doesn't help for a lot of the cases nowadays, because a lot of the cases nowadays you're talking, they're already separated, they're anyway not having relations. It's a problem of her actually getting a get. Here we're talking about they are together, they are living in the same house.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had finished off Rabbi Yossi over Ban Nidus Shalonas and Kitzvah, that Rabbi Yossi had said that it depends when there's a neder about not using kishut, not using cosmetic, then it depends. A poor woman, it's only if there's no limit to the neder, whereas if there is a limit, she should just wait until the limit expires, whereas if it's a rich woman, 30 days. So the question is, l'chama kitzvah, okay, but what is the, even if we say she'en l'kitzvah, can't mean, for example, that he says that you can't use cosmetics for 100 years. I mean, that's effectively the equivalent of forever. So there has to be some kind of limit, even for a poor woman, according to Rabbi Yossi. What is it? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Yud Beis Chodesh, 12 months. Rabba Baba Chana Amar Rabbi Yechanan Eser Shanim. It can be more than that. It can be 10 years. Rav Chista Amar Avimi, regel. Rav Chista says in the name of Avimi, one yomtiv, one of the shalosh regalim. Why? Shekain b'nai sitzurah, meskashis b'regel, because it's normal for Jewish women, even poor women, to put on extra cosmetics and perfume and whatever come yomtiv time.
It's the time nobody misses out.
Yeah. So then, yeah, exactly. So therefore, so if he's making, if he's preventing her via neder from doing that, then that's already enough. Or vashiros lamed yom, and then we said if she's a rich woman, 30 days, maishna lamed yom, wife is 30 days. Amar Rabbi Shekin isha chashuv nehenis mireach kishuter lamed yom, because an important woman will still enjoy the fragrance of her perfume for 30 days. Meaning, normally she'd apply perfume every day. She's rich; she can afford it. If at this point the husband binds her by a neder, according to any of the possibilities that we talked about, a neder becomes binding on her that she can't. Up to 30 days, she still enjoys the fragrance of the last time she put it on. Let's say the morning, the morning before the neder was made, or the night before, whenever it was the last time. So therefore, we have up to 30 days, he says. Continues the Mishnah. More cases of nedarim. At what point after a neder has been in effect for a certain amount of time, when is she entitled to a divorce versus when not? If somebody makes a neder on his wife that she should not go to her father's house, and here also you get into the question, how exactly? I mean, I can't make a neder, for example, saying you're not allowed to drink the seltzer because you don't belong to me and neither does the seltzer. So how is the husband able to make a neder? How is the husband able to bind his wife with a neder that she can't go to her parents' house? And evidently, we're not talking about the kind of case where she made the neder and he confirmed it. The whole point is she resents the fact that such a neder was made. So a couple of different possibilities. One of them, the Rimi Gash points out one possibility. Yes, indeed, la halacha, the neder is not actually chal. But the fact is, the husband, if they were to go to Beis Din and ask, Beis Din would tell him the neder was never in effect in the first place. But the husband doesn't know that. He's trying to actually prevent her, trying to be frum on her cheshbon and say, look, there's a neder, you can't go. Therefore, that's reason enough that we, in other words, really la halacha is not in effect, but as a practical matter, he's not allowing it. So then, therefore, we have a problem.
It's not in effect because the goof belongs to her.
Because her goof belongs to herself, yeah.
But how long can he make it? When he said not to go out, he meant never to go?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Again, it would be the same machlokas Rav and Shmuel that we discussed yesterday, whether it means that chatchila, he made the neder, are we talking about that he made the neder that during the next month you're not allowed to go to your father's house, or does it mean he didn't put a limit on it, but after 30 days, or whatever the time that the mission is going to say over here, then already something's got to be done. Yeah. So it depends. If the father lives with them in the same city, and therefore she's more used to visiting him very often, then if it's up to 1 month, then they can still stay married. If it's 2 months already, then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba, if she wants, obviously. Or if the father is in a different city, so she anyway doesn't go visit him as often, so if the neder was in effect for one yomtov, then they can still stay married. Shlosha yotzviyit and ksuba, whereas for 3 regalim, then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. And the Gemara, we'll talk about what about two? We'll talk about the Gemara. Next case, Hamadu is ishlo sheitelech beta evil or the beta mishta. If a person binds his wife by a neder that she should not go to a shiva house or to a wedding, to a simcha, yotzviyit and ksuba, then also he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba, mefneshin noel before now, because effectively he's locking the door in front of her. But if he has claim, he says, you know what, I don't want you to go to this particular shiva house or this particular wedding because of davar acher, as the Gemara has explained, because of pritzus, but pritzus, different people there, then fine, then that's different. Rashoi, then he's entitled to do that. Next case, Omalah, Amanastra Terminal Tony Masha Maritli. If he tells her that I'm going to make a neder, I'm going to ask you with such and such, if you don't go and tell so and so what you told me in private, and we'll talk about in the Gemara on Ayin Beis, on the Beis, what kind of things we're talking about, Oy Masha Maritli Loch, or what I told you, Oy Shatema Malo Maharal Ashba, or he makes it that you're going to be also in something, and the only way to get out of it is if you fill up and empty into the garbage. Again, what that means, we'll talk about on Ayin Beis, on the Beis. In all those cases, we make him divorce her and give her a ksuba. Each of those things is something improper or demeaning or whatever to her, as we'll talk about later on. So the Gemara starts off, Hogufa Kasha. We have in the second part of the Mishnah about the regalim, you have a stira. Amrit regalach al yukayim. You say that if the neder was in effect for only one regal, when her father lives out of town, then yukayim, they still stay married. She doesn't have grounds for divorce yet. Hoshnayim yotzivit nksuba, which implies once two yom tovim have come and the neder is still in effect, then already he can be forced to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Ema sefer, but then the next part says shloisha yotzivit nksuba, hoshnayim yukayim. So it's only three that makes it that she's entitled to a get, not two. I'm a bias.
Much more than 3 months, by the way, to regalim.
No, but we said there's a difference whether the father lives in town or not. If the father lives out of town, she anyway doesn't go visit him every month. Usually she would only go and visit him on Yom Tovim. So fine, that's a reasonable distinction, but the Mishnah is saying one or three, so what happens to two? Amrabaya Seifa Son Lekehenet for Rabbi Yehuda. Sabaya says, yes, that part about the regalim is talking about the 3 months. It's talking about the wife of a Kohen. And it goes back to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion from the first Mishnah who said that there's a difference between a Yisrael and a Kohen. In other words, effectively what the Mishnah is saying is, yes, in the case of a Yisrael, if it was one regal fine, two regalim, she already has grounds for divorce. If it was a Kohen's wife, make it two and three respectively because you want to give him extra time to get the neder canceled or whatever because if he divorces her, they won't be able to remarry. And Mefarshim talk about in that case, then why does the Mishnah not make that distinction in the first part? It just says 1 month or 2 months. A couple of different possibilities. One of them is we already had in the previous Mishnah something about 1 month versus two, and Rabbi Yehuda said two versus three. We never heard anything about the same machloikas being by regalim. So Abaya is telling us, yes, the same machloikas would apply to regalim as well. Rabba Ba'ula, Amad Laikasha, Rabba Ba'ula gives a different answer. There's no contradiction between the one regal and the three. Can be redufa, can be she'ena redufa. It depends whether she's. Rashi says that redufa means that she regularly goes and visits her father's house. So therefore, since she very regularly goes there every yomtiv. So if two regalim are already passing and she's not allowed to go, one regal fine. She can miss. But if she miss, she's already having to miss two regalim, that's already grounds. Mashenkin, if she's not that regular anyway, then wait till three. Tosfos brings a different explanation from Rabbi Chananel that redufa means we're talking about usually after a woman gets married, usually in particular the first yomtiv after they get married, they spend by her parents. So in this case, we're talking about over here that she's never gone before. After they got married, she's never had a chance to go home and tell them about how married life is, how she's getting along with her husband. Therefore, So we're saying, in other words, that once you have, so regal echad yikayim means that if she had to miss that first yomtiv, fine. Well, you know, if she has to miss the first yomtiv, fine. But if she has to miss two already, then already that's grounds for divorce. Mashenkin, if she already had a chance at least one time to go home, then already we say three. Since we're mentioning this concept of redufa, of a woman who's eager to go to her parents' house and report on how things are going, so the Gemara brings a little drush on that. The pasuk says near the end of Shir Hashirim, "Oz ha'yisi be'enav kamotzei shalom." The woman in the mashal, the Jewish people in the nimshal, say, "Then I was in his eyes like one who finds favor." What does that mean? Amar Rabbi Yechanan. We learned this in Psachim as well. Kala shenimtzei shlema be'beis chamiya. This is like a kala who is she's living in her father-in-law's house, meaning that she's married, and usually you know you have an edim of kest, you have the father-in-law supports them and has them living in his house or a little outbuilding or whatever for the first couple of years. So she's found shlema, she's found complete and perfect in her father-in-law's house. Now she's getting along very well with her husband. Now she's eager to go home and tell her parents all about it. That's kamotzei shalom. The Chassam Sofer, by the way, has an interesting word on it. He says, an interesting drush. He says, Beis Chamiya refers to the Beis Medrash, where you learn Torah, and Beis Aviyah refers to the Shul, where you daven today, Vishter. So the message is, in other words, what the message of the drasha is that I just like you have a kala who's living in Beis Chamiya and now is eager to rush off to Beis Aviyah and tell how well she's doing. The same way you go from the Beis Medrash directly to davening as we do usually with our shir, and then you then that makes it that your tefillah is someone to scabble.
Get someone first.
Well, okay, during the day. All right. Speaking of, another pasuk says, "V'hoya b'yemahu nuum Hashem." The pasuk says in Hosea, the Eidishter says, "On that day, after Mashiach comes, Tikri Ishi, you will call me my Ish." Rashi says, "Meloshin Ishus v'nisurin," as in we're married. "V'lo Tikri li oy Bali, you won't call me Bali anymore." What's the difference between Ish and Baal? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kekalo Beis Chamiya V'lo Kekalo Beis Avia. Again, it's a similar idea, that it means that the Jewish people, the relationship between us and the Eivishter at that point, will be like a Kala in her father-in-law's house, where she's already fully married and living happily with her husband, as opposed to when she's in Beis Avia, where like she's, you know, the chassan is here and she's there, kind of thing. So the vote is, according to Rashi, the vote is Ishi represents Ishus, that we're actually living together as husband and wife. Mashenkin Baal is more like he's my master. So the vote is that, in other words, now we serve the Eivishter primarily out of Yira. In loss of love, it'll be more out of Ava. Marsha says a different vote on it also, that the pasuk continues over there, that the name of Baal won't be in the mouths of the Jewish people anymore. Baal, besides meaning a husband, is also the name of a famous Avodah Zarah. So the vote is, we'll call the Eivishter Ishi rather than Baali, because there won't be any... What?
Baal
the Avodah Zarah, yeah.
Baal there
was Baal.
Baal.
Yeah.
Baal,
Baal. Baal. Baal.
Baal.
Baal. Baal. Baal. Baal. Baal is Bel, that's something else. That's something else. So the vart is, in other words, that we'll call the Abish to Ishi rather than Bali, because we won't even think of words having to do with Avodah Zarah.
Like a boss, you know?
Yeah, that's according to Rashi, that's the difference. An Ish is a husband and wife who are on an equal level. Mashenkin Baal represents that, like, she's subservient to him, yeah. Okay, the Mishnah continued, Hamadir Tishnei V'cholo, that a man binds his wife by a neder that she won't go to a Beis HaOvel, to a Shiva house, or to a wedding. And we say that Yotziv Yitin Ksuva, because he's locking up the door in front of her. So I'm going to ask Kishlema the Beis Mishta Ikon Noel B'Fanei. I can understand if he's preventing her from going to weddings, that's Noel B'Fanei, that she, like this, she should have a chance to go to a Simcha and then feel better. El Beis Eva, my Noel B'Fanei Ikon. What's so bad if he prevents her from going to a Shiva house? It's a pretty depressing thing anyway. What's she losing out by not going there? The answer is, Tana, because we learn in a Braisa, what's going to happen eventually? L'macha he may say, eventually she's going to die. The Ein Kol Briya Seifta. And nobody's going to make a hesped for her. If she never went to be Menachem Oval, anybody else, nobody's going to want to bother making a hesped for her when she dies. So that's the noble for now, that she's losing out by it. The Ikadamri Ein Kol Briya Seifna. A different version is not Seifda with a Dalit, but Seifna with a Nun, Meloshin burying her. Nobody's going to be bothering to bury her. If she doesn't go to be Gomel Chesed, to attend Levias and Shiva houses and whatever, then nobody's going to want to bother with her either. He has the Chiyu, fine, but what if he dies before her? Before her? Tanya, we learn in a bright. So how you're up, Meir? I'm a ma'idich tiv tov lelechas al beis evil, lelechas al beis mishta. What does it mean? The pasuk says in Tehillah, it's better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, to a wedding. Vasher usayf kol adam, because evil is the end of every person. Every person ends up dying. Vachai yitin aliba, and the living should take it to heart. The famous pasuk that Rebbe always was quoting after Chavei Shvat. What does this mean? The living should take it to heart. It has to mean more than just the fact that you have to consider you're eventually going to die. That already it says. Basher says Kaladim. What is Vachai Yitin Alibay adding to that? It's teaching us Dvarim Shal Misa. It means that a person should consider that what's going to happen with them after they die. The Safed Yisbedunay, somebody who makes a hesped, who cries for others, they'll cry for him. The Kaver Yisbedunay, somebody who buries others, he will have the chus that they'll bury him. The Yedel, somebody who picks up. Who lifts up his voice, Rashi says, to cry out. Yidlune, they'll do the same for him. They'll cry out for him. Dulavai, somebody who goes to a Levai, Yulavune, they'll be malava him. Datan, somebody who picks up the mess and carries the aron on their shoulders, Yitanune, they'll do the same for him. So the verte is, therefore, if the husband prevents his wife from going to these kinds of things, then he's making her a social outcast. Then she's when she dies, they're not going to give her the kind of cover that she deserves. And therefore, Yotzev Yitin Ksuva. Okay, then we said, on this last thing, by the way, the Haflah says a vote. You know, we always talk about that doing a chesed from Mason, burying a mess, is a chesed shalemes, famous pasuk at the beginning of Vayechi. Chesed shalemes, Rashi says, because it's a chesed that you don't get any reward for. Don't we see from our Gemara, you do get a reward. Somebody else does the same thing for you. It is very simple. Chesed shalemes, it's called that because you don't expect to get a reward from the actual mess himself. Yes, min hashemayim, there'll be a reward, and the Eivishter will arrange that other people will do it. Elu dvarim shadu mechal peres seim b'olam hazeh, etc. And one of them is halvayas ames. The mess himself is not going to be able to pay you back. That's the MS in the chesed. Then the Mishnah continued, "V'mhayatayin mishum drava achar rashoi," that if the husband is claiming that at this shiva house or wedding there's drava achar, then he's allowed to prevent her from going. My drava achar. Amar Rav Yehuda mishum mishum bnei adam pritzin shemitzuyim. We're talking about those pritzin stick people there. He doesn't want his wife being around such people. Amar Rav Ashi lo yamaran ela deischazet. That's only talking about though if there's actually a chazaka that there are such people there. He knows the family, for example. He knows that there are that type. But if there's no chazaka that there's such people, then no, you can't believe him to say I think there are princistic people there. You can't go. That's not an excuse.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Then we said v'im amalam anastra tomri. If he tells her that you're going to be usher in such and such, if you don't tell Pliny what I told you or what you told me or what I told you. The question is v'tema. So what's the problem? Let her say it over. What kind of Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Dvarim Shel Kolayin? We're talking about embarrassing things. What kind of embarrassing things are we talking about? So one possibility, Rashi Ma'adur Kamas, Gordon Shittim Ukubetzes, says it's talking about that the husband had told his wife to the husband had told his wife to say to curse him. That's not clear from the Lashon whether he means that he wanted her to curse him himself, the husband, like some people like their wives to talk dirty to them, or whether she meant that he's telling her, you should curse Pliny, and now I want you to go tell him what I told you to tell him, that sort of thing. The other possibility is Dvarim Shel Kolayin. The Rambam explains that it means they're talking about personal matters, like the kind of casual talk, the kind of small talk that a husband and wife have when they're getting intimate, when they're going to have relations. If he's telling her to go and tell that sort of thing over to somebody else, to a third party, that's a terribly embarrassing thing, and it's a very, very improper thing. Okay, then we said, Oshitema Malo Ma'ara La'ashba, if the husband tells the wife that you have to fill up and empty into the garbage, again, the question is, V'ta'avid, so let her do it, what's the problem? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shitamale V'nefetis. What he's telling her actually is, he doesn't just mean like fill up a container and empty it into the garbage. He means fill up as in after we have relations, I want you to take steps to nefetis to make it all flow out, to prevent you from getting pregnant. So what's the issue is, the issue is the two possibilities and what the issue is. One is we learned in a previous parak that a woman has the right to be, we learned this in Yevamos also, that a woman has the right to say, you know what, I want to have children because otherwise who's going to take care of me in my old age? So therefore, if he's telling her to do exercises or whatever to prevent her from conceiving, then that she has a claim against that. The other possibility that Ravid and then a number of other Rishonim bring is there might be an issue of Ashkosa Zera. Usually we talk about a man definitely has an issue of Ashkosa Zera, of wasting seed. It's a machloikus Rishonim, partly based on this Gemara over here, whether the same issue applies to a woman as well. So if he's telling her, according to that, he's telling her to do something which is blatantly offered. But Masnisa Tana, we learn in a Braisa a different explanation, that he tells her, Shetamala Asore Kade Mayim Uta'ara La'ashba. He tells her, I want you to fill up 10 jugs full of water and pour them into the trash. Yeah. So the question is, Bishlam the Shmuel, Mishamachi Yotzeviyat and Ksuba. I can understand Shmuel's idea, Mamala ben Ephesus, contraception, therefore Yotzeviyat and Ksuba. She has a valid claim against that. Again, either that she wants children or that it may even be also for her to do. El Masnissimai Nachbelamina, but according to the understanding of the Braisa, that it means fill up 10 pails of water and pour them into the garbage. What's so terrible about that, that she's entitled to a divorce? Let her just do it. Because it makes her look like an idiot in front of everybody. What are you filling up water and pouring it into the tray, pouring it down the drain for, and in full view of everybody? You're doing it for no purpose. It just looks like this. Yeah. Well, this is also true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right, but let's say water is plentiful, but still, it's like a purposeless task. Again, it's beneath her dignity. In those days, let's say it was. Let's say they live right next door to a river. There's no problem getting 10 jugs of water, but to have to fill it and pour it out is just a stupid thing to do when it's beneath her dignity.
Yeah.
Amar Rav Kahana, another din. Hamadiris ishta leshle tishal veshle tashal napa vere. Hamadiris ishta, a person makes his wife bound by a neder, shle tishal, that she shouldn't borrow from the neighbors, veshle tashal, or that she should not lend to them the following, napa, a sieve, or kvara, or a sifter, those are different kinds of things that you use for, one is for sifting grain, one is for sifting flour. Verechayim, or millstones to grind grain, v'tanur, or an oven, yotziviyat and ksuba. In all those cases, he can force them to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Shemasiya shem rabbi shcheneseh, but he's giving her a bad reputation among her neighbors. That she doesn't want to lend them. They're going to think that she's cheap, and that she doesn't want to borrow from them. Also, the idea is one explanation is why doesn't she want to borrow from us? Because then she won't have to lend us either. So again, it makes her look antisocial to them. Rashi, by the way, points out an important detail over here that we're talking about when we talk about the millstones and the oven. We're talking about movable ones. And the point of that is, before I should explain, that Amman says somewhat similarly, if they're fixed in place in the house, then the husband does have a valid claim. I don't want strangers just coming into even the neighbors. I have a right to decide who comes into my house and who doesn't. But if it's a movable oven, take it out and then lend it to her. Yeah. And again, but with all of this, again, you also have the question exactly how the husband is able to bind his wife by such a neder. Again, either we're talking about that the kalim belonged to him, or we're talking about either the neder was, for example, that he's saying that if you borrow an oven, for example, then I won't eat anything that was baked in that oven, and then necessarily then you know, he's not going to be able to eat, etc. Tani Nami Hachi, we learned similarly in Braisa, Hamadu is Ishtoi, someone makes his wife bound by a neder, Shalatishav or Shalatashal Nafo Kvoter Rechaim B'Tanur, that she won't borrow or lend out a sieve or a sifter or millstones or an oven, Yotzi Vietin Ksuba, then he has to divorce her and give her a Ksuba, but Beshem Asiya Shem Rabish Chaneseh, because he's giving her a bad reputation among her neighbors.
V'chein, Tisha
means to borrow,
and Tashil
means to lend. Yeah. So again, if she doesn't want to lend them, then it makes her look cheap. And antisocial, and she doesn't want to borrow either. One idea is people are going to say, you know, she doesn't want to borrow because she doesn't want to be indebted to us and have to lend to us. V'chein he shenadra. Similarly, if the wife makes a neder, that she won't borrow or lend out any of these kalim, the sieve, the sifter, the millstones, or the oven. Or, for example, she makes a neder that she won't weave nice clothes for the children, which was a normal thing that women did in those days. Then she can be divorced without uksuba. Because here it's the other way around. She's making him look antisocial and not neighborly. Yeah, without uksuba, because in that case it's her fault. In the first case it was his fault. He's the one who bound her by the neder. In the second case it's her fault. Yeah. Mishnah says, the following cases of women can be divorced without a ksuba. Number one, if she's over on das Moshe, dinim min haTorah, v'yehudis, or das yehudis, which is basically, Rashi says das yehudis is shenagu b'nei Yisrael, minhagim that are accepted by Jewish women. As examples that we'll talk about in the Gemara.
Das Moshe is halacha.
Das Moshe would be black letter halacha, yeah. Some Rishonim also learn that Das Yehudis also includes local minhag. We'll talk about that when we get in the Gemara, for example, a matter of covering her hair. The different minhagim on that. The Ezri Das Moshe, what are examples when she's over on something min haTorah? Machilata She'enim Moser, she gives him food to eat that's not Meiser, which is Tevel, which is also for him to eat. Shamashtin Nida, or she has relations with him while she's in Nida, which would make him Chayiv Karis. Or she doesn't take off challah, so he's eating bread that doesn't have challah taken from it, which again is aser. Or she makes nedarim and doesn't keep them. So the first three of those things, actually, one point is, the Rosh points out the reason why the Mishnah mentions these examples is because if it's something that she does, if she's over on Das Moshe in a way that doesn't affect her husband, then no, we don't say that Yotzi v'yitin ksuba necessarily. For example, if she herself eats today for food, for example, not necessarily that doesn't affect her husband per se. So therefore, that's not valid grounds. That's not valid grounds for divorce, let alone without a ksuba. If she prepares him today for food, or we talked about over here, food that's not mice or whatever, that's different. As for the nederes vein, we'll talk about in the Gemara in what way that affects him or the family life, whatever.
That's your audience, though.
No, if she herself eats shayf, she is, of course that's called over al das Moshe, but for purposes of our Mishnah, that's why. I mean, what does that Mishnah have to say, ve'ezri das Moshe? The whole shas is das Moshe, what are you talking about? It means davka, these kinds of things of das Moshe that directly affect him. Ezri das Yehudis, what are cases of das Yehudis? Yotze v'rosha parua, if she goes out with her hair uncovered, which we'll talk about in the Gemara, the details.
But
we'll wait, relax, we'll get there at the bottom of the Amud. V'tova b'shuk, or she spins thread out in the street. And again, we'll talk about in the Gemara what the problem with that is, but it basically it's a lack of tzniyus. We'll talk about it on Omid Beis the details. Umedaberes im kol adam, or she talks with anybody. And again, we'll talk about in the Gemara. It doesn't just mean stam, she talks. No, it means she talks with men in a flirtatious way or whatever, in an unsneistic way. Another case, Abishol says, is if she curses his parents in his presence. Reb Tarfon says also a woman who's very loud. The Ezri Kelanis, what do we mean by very loud? She's talking in her house, and her neighbors hear her voice. What kind of talking? What we're dealing with, we'll learn in the Gemara. We're not stopping talking that she has a loud voice. We all know women like that. We're talking about certain kinds of things that are very loud in the neighbors. One thing, by the way, when the Mishnah starts off the Elu Yotzis Shloim B'Ksuba, there's a Machlokas Rishonim on the question: are we saying that it's an obligation on the husband to divorce his wife in these cases, or are we saying he should? It's a mitzvah for him to, but it's not. But if he wants to stay married to her and try to work things out, then he's entitled to do that. It's a machlokas aposkin. Also you have the question, when we say that she forfeits her ksuba, are we talking about it in an automatic thing, or does she have to be warned first? And if she has to be warned first, what does the warning have to consist of? Is it just don't do this, stop serving me food that's not meiser, or is it stop serving me food that's not meiser because if you do, you will lose your ksuba? That kind of thing. One more thing, by the way, is that a number of poskim talk about the idea that now you can have a case where a man married a woman knowing that she does these things to begin with, and later on he becomes a baal tshuva. This happens nowadays. I was reading a long and complex tshuva by a rav in Eretz Yisrael who deals he deals with a case of a couple that were married. When they were married, neither of them was frum. Later on, the husband started becoming frum. The wife didn't really want to go along with it, and in particular, she still wanted to go to the beach in a bathing suit, and he was objecting. It's not sneistic. This rub goes in a whole bunch of pros and cons. It comes out basically, look, you know, bottom line, there's no question it's absolutely unsneistic, but you married her knowing that she's not sneistic. The fact that you're becoming frum now doesn't necessarily entitle you to divorce for grounds for divorce, let alone without a ksuba.
The Gemara doesn't put condition that you should have knew that.
But that's poets can talk about that idea.
Yeah. According to some Gemara.
Okay.
But
one thing is, we'll see from the first line of the Gemara. Let's see. Let's start learning the Gemara, and we'll see a source for it. So the first question is, what do you mean, machilat sheinim oser? What do you mean, we're saying that she gives him food that's not ma'aser? Hey chidami, what exactly is the case? Idi yoda, if he knows it's not ma'aser, nifresh, then it's his responsibility not to eat it. That's the vart. That's the vart. If he, what the Gemara is saying is, he has a certain responsibility over here also. If he knows that something is oser, or he should know that something is oser, then yes, it's his responsibility to stay away from it. Applying to our case of the Baal Tshuva, when he married her, he accepted the fact, for example, that she wears a bathing suit. The fact that now he became frum and wants and knows better basically and wants to change his mind doesn't necessarily entitle that's based on this Gemara over here, that he has a certain responsibility over here also. We can't be talking about, in other words, that he knows what's going on and is willingly going and eating the food or whatever it is anyway.
What are we talking about?
So that's the question. So if he knows nifresh, then he should stay away. Idla yada no yada. And if he doesn't know it's not ma'aser, then how is he going to find out? The answer is, suppose that his wife tells him, so-and-so, a koyin, fixed up the pile of grain for me, meaning he took out the truma and ma'aser. Whether it has to say koyin over here, there's different gusos about it. So Rashi Madur Kama says that maybe we shouldn't be goyin koyin, because anybody can take truma, as long as she appoints him a shliach. But the other possibility is that usually a kohen would do it because he's tahor and because he'll take the truma while he's at it, etc. The ozel shayli, the husband goes and asks the kohen, the ishtakach shikra, and it turns out that it was a lie. So therefore, now he knows it wasn't ma'aser.
So that's
the case of our mission over here. So he thought that it was ma'aser. He went ahead and ate the food, and then it turns out that she deceived him. Yeah.
That's a
That's the case we're talking about in the Mishnah. Tosfos points out, and other Mepharshim point out, I mean, there are other possibilities also. There could come Edim that it wasn't Meisir, she herself could admit it, but those are less common cases, and the case of if she admits it is complicated anyway, because would that make her lose her Ksuba? You can't necessarily say that a person loses a Ksuba based on their own admission, etc. Anyway.
But if she made a mistake, an Alachic mistake.
And a mistake, is a mistake. Okay, but we're talking about on purpose. How about next? The Mishnah says the case where she had relations with him while she's in Nida. Again, Hechidami, what's the case? If he knows that she's in Nida, it's his responsibility to withdraw, to stay away. And if he doesn't know, then what's the problem? He's entitled to rely on her, whether she's in Nida or not. He's not going to be chayiv if it was b'shogeg. No, of course not. But the point is, a woman is trusted on her state of being tamei or tahor. As a matter of fact, many mepharshim say that from this gemara over here, from the pasuk that the gemara is going to quote now, we learn the concept throughout the Torah that eidecha neman b'isurin, that even one aid can be trusted on a matter of isur v'hesed, because we see over here that a woman who herself is one aid, and of course she's negei b'davar, is believed to say I'm tahor, and her husband can rely on that. Wait. So again, how is it that he had relations with her and only then later found out that she's nida? How do we know that a nida can just count on her own, the 7 days? She doesn't have to check with anybody else. She never suffered a loss of yomim, and we learn law la'asma. She should count for herself 7 days, meaning she just counts for herself. She doesn't have to coordinate with anybody else. The answer is again, suppose she tells him, I had a discharge. I took it to a rav to ask whether it's tame or not, because there's only certain shades that are tame. And the rav said it's mutter. So then they had relations. Later on, the husband went and asked the rav. And turns out that it was a lie. Or another possibility. How did he find out later that she's a nida? Like the case that Rabbi Yehuda says, the Amr Rabbi Yehuda, if a woman has a chazaka among her neighbors that she's a nida, for example, Rashi says that the women in those days, when they were nida, used to wear different clothing than the rest of the time when they were tahor. We learned previously that that's why, for example, the husband gives her new clothes every Yom Tov or every year or whatever it is, and she uses the worn out ones. One purpose is she uses them when she's nida. So if her neighbors have a chazaka that she's nida because they see her wearing those clothes, then the husband, if he has relations with her at that point, can get malchus. If she was told that she has a chazaka and he still had relations with her, he would get malchus. So here we're talking about similar idea that they had relations and then the neighbors told him, yesterday we saw your wife walking around with her nidah clothes. By the way, a side thing from our Gemara that's relevant to this time of year, the Tosfos points out in the Safrala, an interesting question. If we're saying over here that the pasuk the Safrala, that a Nida, or a Zava actually we're talking about, has to count 7 days, we're doing Sfira Soimer now. We count every day with a bracha. Hayom X number Loimer. Asher Kedushanim Tosfos Tzvanal Sfira Soimer. Why doesn't a Zava also count on the days that she counts? So this just gives a reason, because the difference is that the difference is with a Zava, at any time during the 7 days, she might see another, she might have another flow of blood, and then the 7 days are canceled. So therefore, you don't make a bracha to begin with on something which is on something which may end up getting canceled. As opposed to Sfiras Omer, we know it's going to go straight through.
If you forget,
fine. But
what? You can't start over.
No, you can't start over. But okay, at least there. Usually, you would be able to count all the way through Sfira Saimer. Zava, there's a possibility that it may get broken off. That's a different matter. Nowadays, that women count 7 clean days only as a matter of suffix anyway, because it's only suffix nida, suffix zava, then for sure you wouldn't make a bracha. It's only a matter of suffix. We're talking about back in the old days when it was definite whether a woman is nida or zava. Having said that, by the way, the Shalah HaKadosh... The Shalach Kodesh wants to say that, okay, maybe she doesn't have to make a bracha like Tosfos is saying over here, but at least she should verbally say, today is the first day, today is the second day, etc. A number of other Acharonim argue with the Shalach on that, though, and in particular, they point to the Chinuch says that another reason why a woman doesn't have to count the days specifically or make a bracha, he says, because the difference is, Sfira Sa'omer, if you didn't count the days, there's nothing to distinguish these days from any others throughout the year. Mashenkim, the Shiva Nikiyim, there is an obvious difference. You're nucky. You're counting them as clean days. You're wearing different clothes. You're checking for any stains, etc. So therefore, that itself makes enough of a distinction between those and any other days that you don't actually have to verbally count them. And that's taqat halacha, is that in Taras HaMishbacha, there's no obligation on the woman to actually count the days verbally, let alone to make a bracha on it.
She has to count 7 days. Doesn't mean she has to verbally count
Hayom Yom Echad Hayom Shnei Yom. That's what we're saying. Okay. So the Shalach HaKadosh wants to say that she should, but everybody else disagrees with him. Yeah. There is a deeper connection to it, by the way, in the fact that the Zohar actually makes a connection between the 7 days, between the 7 clean days that a Zohar counts and the 7 weeks that we're counting to make ourselves clean for Matan Torah. So there is a certain deeper connection there. Next, for Lekotzel of Chala, next case you had, the Mishnah was that she didn't take off Chala. Again, Hechidami, what's the case? Idi Yodan Nifresh, if he knows that Chala wasn't taken before he eats, then let him stay away from it. And if you didn't find out, then how does he find out later? Same idea as before. She tells him that so-and-so, the baker, separated challah from me. He goes and asks the baker, and turns out that it was not true. Then we said, the fourth case in the Mishnah was that she makes nedarim and doesn't keep him. What's the problem with that? The other three, fine, directly affect him. He's eating something that's also, or having relations with her, and she's also. What's the problem with Nadarim? The reason is, because we learned in Shabbos that for the punishment of Nadarim that aren't kept, a person's little children may die, Rahman al-Fan. Shenema, the Pasuk says, don't let your mouth cause your flesh, meaning your children, to sin, to have problems. And the Pasuk finishes off, that the Eivishter will destroy the work of your hands. What is the work of a person's hands? Is his children. So we see that there's that connection. So therefore, he has a right to divorce them at that point because she's causing their children. She may cause, if her nedarim, she may cause the children to die.
And if he does it, can she divorce him?
Probably, yeah. I mean, she can't divorce, but probably she would probably have a claim in based in, yeah, Mustama. Rab Nachman says you have a different pasuk that expresses this idea. The pasuk says, "Lashavi kasi espenechem." For nothing, I've hit your children. The context is the pasuk is saying like it's all done a whole. It hasn't done any good all this time. I've been. The Eibishter says I'm punishing you in order that you should do tshuva, and it hasn't been doing any good. But the Gemara darshins. Lashav meaning al diske shav, because of nothingness, because a person makes a neder, doesn't keep it, which is a version of shvur of loisisa shem hashem lekecha lashav. Tanya, we learn in a braisa, ha'yir of meyomer, kol yadei beishte shenederes ve'enim akayemes. If somebody knows that his wife is making the darim and not keeping them, what should he do? Not necessarily does he have to divorce her. If he has an out, yafta biyidirena, he should go and place her under a neder. Question is, I'm a second law. How does that help? She's going to violate that neder too. Ella, what it means is yachzav yachitena. What he should do is he should try to get her upset. Kadesha tider b'fana, because that way, in the heat of the argument, she will make a neder right in front of him. The yachrala, and then he's able to cancel the neder. So we're talking about, let's say, previous nedarim. We're not going to worry about for now. Let's say previous nedarim she said, I'm not going to do such for a week. Fine, the week is over. That's over and done with. Now, from now on, how do you keep from making nedarim in the future and not keeping them? Make sure, when is she going to make a neder? Only if it's in front of you. So make sure, get her into a frame of mind where in the heat of the moment she'll spit out a neder. And then you can just cancel it right then and there.
That's
not going to work. You can't expect a person to live in one basket with a snake. In other words, he'd have to be constantly on guard then to make sure all the time that no neder is ever made by her when he's not available. To cancel it, you can't live that way. Tanya, we learn in Brice, if a man knows that his wife is not taking off challah for him, what should he do again? Not necessarily does he have to divorce her. Let him just go take challah from the dough after her. And again, no, you can't do that. You can't be expected to live with somebody unpredictable. Like the point of us of calling it a snake is like a snake is unpredictable. It can bite at any time. Like again, you can't necessarily expect the person to always be vigilant like that. So the Gemara points out, if you say And so we had two braises that seemed to say the same thing, that the husband has a way to make sure that the right thing is done. If we say that that it refers to the second case of challah, then how much more so to nedarim? Because challah is a daily thing. People would bake bread every day. Nedarim is an occasional thing. So if you're able to be careful with challah every day, certainly you'll be able to be careful with the occasional nedarim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Aval man de machniyahach, but the first price, if we say that it only refers to the matter of nedarim, aval ha, but in the case of challah, even Rabbi Meir might agree that that's grounds for divorce, and he doesn't. You can't say that you should make him have to check after her. Zimni de mikri va'achol, because it can happen that he forgets about the challah and goes and eats it and forgets that he has to take off challah.
That's what a pukfaket, I mean, no? But you never know when she's going to make another. Here, he's in the chadar, so you could pick.
Okay, but Nadarim, the assumption is that Nadarim aren't a daily thing.
You could take a
No, the point is that chala has to be taken. But the point is, if you can't depend on. No, it doesn't mean that she herself has to, but somebody has to. If she's not reliable about it, then you can't expect him to be on guard about it, because he may forget.
But if he takes a sheep who does it every day.
Fine, if there's a sheep who does it every day, then that's different.
Awesome.
No, okay, but the average person can't afford a sheep. I'm not talking about that. If you have a sheep, then she's probably baking the bread to begin with. Why would you hire a sheep just to take off challah?
Because you cannot
eat. Come on, you're not going to do that. If she's baking the bread as a whole, then yeah.
But he's a
prying,
he doesn't want to divorce her.
Okay, then he'll let... Fine, look, we're not saying he has to divorce her. The Chachamim are telling him, right. You can't tell him, if he wants to go and divorce her, the Chachamim are arguing in these two cases, Beis Din shouldn't tell him, you know what, deal with it, manage, you know, make it that Nedarim will only be done in your presence, make it that he'll take off challah, you can't expect. But if he wants to be able to deal with it, fine, okay, let him deal with it. I should mention, by the way, about that chlokas rishonim that I was mentioning before, whether she forfeits her ksuba automatically or not. There's one of the shittas in that is the shitta of the Rambam, which is specifically he mentions it in connection with the dinim of tznius that I mentioned in the Mishnah, that if she's not acting in a tzniustic way, the das yehudas things that I mentioned in the Mishnah, the reason she's not entitled to a ksuba, the Rambam says, is basically, what's the whole reason for a ksuba? Shleike kalaba ein of laitzia. You don't want to make it easy for the husband to divorce his wife. If she's not acting tzniustic, let him feel easier to divorce her. And that's why she loses her ksuba. Whereas other Rishonim say that's more a matter of a knaf. And therefore, if it's a knaf, then there needs to be a warning. Mishnah continued, whether or our example of Das Yehudis is if she goes out with her hair uncovered. That's an Issa Deraisa. The pasuk says by a saita that the kohen should uncover the woman's head. From this pasuk we see that there's an issur on Jewish women to go out with their hair uncovered. How do we see that from the pasuk? Rashi gives two possibilities. One is the fact that we're doing it to her as to the saita as a nivel, as a disgraceful thing, shows that normally it would be osur. She may have uncovered her hair for her lover, therefore we're doing it in public to her, implying that normally that would be awesome. Or the other possibility is the fact that the pasuk is saying with kara, that implies that up until now her hair has been covered. Why? Because Jewish women cover their hair. So why are we calling it Das Yehudis? The answer is the Raisa Kalosa Shapir Dami. If on a deraisa level, it's enough if she just wears kalosa. Now, what is kalosa? Rashi says that it's a basket. You see sometimes in pictures like Arab women or African women or whatever carrying baskets on their heads. The kind of basket that they had in those days for that purpose, it had a big basket on top and it had a rounded base, so that like you could wear it as kind of like a cap. So mid deraisa, if she's wearing that, then that's good enough. Das Yehudis Afila Kalosa. One second, we'll talk about that. Das Yehudis Afila Kalosa Nami. Also, where Das Yehudis would say that it's not good enough for Kalosa, you need more than that. Now, what's the problem with Kalosa? There's a few different possibilities that we're showing him talk about. One is that it doesn't cover all her hair, so therefore she needs something else to cover the rest of her hair that sticks out on the sides. Another possibility is the Kalosa, it's a basket, so it has holes in it. So maybe it covers all the hair, but you can still see a lot of the hair through the hole. Therefore, you need something over it to cover, or under it, whatever, in order to cover up the hair that could be seen through the hole. And then there's a third possibility. The Rambam says that kalosa doesn't mean a basket. He learns that kalosa means tichel. a kerchief on her head. The Rambam writes that the midah raisa, just wearing a tichel, would be enough. Based on Das Yehudis, she needs to also wear redig, a shawl that covers that covers her hair and covers like her upper body, like not a shetel, a wig. That's something else. No, it's more like these abaya or whatever that you see Muslim women wearing nowadays. Not the kind that covers the face, the kind that just covers the head. And like you see also, for example, I guess you could say it's sort of like what a nun wears, kind of.
That's from the hair loose.
The point is, according to the Rambam, that midah raisa, one covering, the kalosa, would be enough. Das Yehudis, you need more than that. You need this redid. You need this shawl. To a certain extent, that's the question of what Das Yehudis, that gets into the question of what Das Yehudis is exactly. Does Das Yehudis mean just the minhag of Jewish women, or does it also include community norms? The Rambam, living in Muslim countries, is talking according to the standards that are in those kinds of countries. In different places, you have Das Moshe and a certain degree of Das Yehudis is a basic minimum. On top of that, each community has different standards. So we'll get to that also tomorrow when we talk about a bit more about some of the other dinim of Pnius that the Gemara talks about over here. But we'll leave that for tomorrow.